KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. On his last day in office, President Joe Biden commuted the sentence of Leonard Peltier. Peltier had already spent nearly 50 years in prison for the murders of two FBI agents in South Dakota in 1975, a crime he denies doing. The 80-year-old AIM activist is now living in his homeland of North Dakota and has not granted interview requests from many news outlets, including National Native News. However, the Associated Press's Graham Brewer was given access recently, and so far is the only journalist to interview Peltier after his release. I talked to Brewer, a Cherokee Nation member and longtime reporter, about his visit with Peltier.
He was in good spirits. I met him at his new house on the Turtle Mountain Reservation. Has a really nice little two-bedroom home with an office where he's planning to write his next book.
Brewer says Peltier gets around with a walker or a cane and is eager to start painting, something he did while in prison. After years of campaigning and lobbying for freedom, Peltier confessed that he began to lose hope.
He was pretty convinced that he was never going to be released and that he would die in prison. One of the details he told me that really stayed with me is just even on the plane ride home, he kept having these feelings that the plane would disappear and it would all be a dream and he would be back in his cell.
While he enjoys support from many in the Native and international community, Peltier acknowledges that there are those who oppose his commutation. One is the FBI, while the other are relatives and supporters of Anna Mae Pictou Aquash, an AIM activist whose body was found on the Pine Ridge Reservation in 1976. Denise Pictou Maloney has long accused Peltier of killing her mother. Brewer says he asked Peltier about this opposition.
Yeah, they're still very unhappy, the federal law enforcement, that he was commuted and able to be released. In terms of Anna Mae Pictou Aquash's family, they're still very much convinced that Mr. Peltier had some knowledge of her death or was involved in some way, even though two other men were eventually convicted and incarcerated for that crime. He was very clear that, you know, he considered her a friend and a colleague, that he had no knowledge of her death and was very happy that the two men who were convicted of it were tried and put away.
And how he'll spend his final years, Brewer says Peltier expressed a passion for working with the next generation of Native American activists.
He really wants to train them on the threats that they'll face and encourage them to just show up and be present and protest the taking away of any kind of land rights or indigenous self-determination or tribal sovereignty or treaty rights. He thinks that's still a really important part of being an activist today and that those threats are still very much alive.
Meanwhile, some Peltier supporters say that he deserves a full pardon and that President Trump should grant one. Brewer says that possibility wasn't touched on much in their conversation, but Peltier maintains his innocence. He had been sentenced to two consecutive life terms for the agents' deaths, plus 7 years for an armed escape attempt in 1979. And indigenous entrepreneurs are meeting in Las Vegas this week for the National Center for the American Indian Enterprise Development Conference. Dr. R.D. Plato, managing director of Yellowtail Healthcare, a national healthcare group, wants the Trump administration to be cautious about federal health cuts.
There's an incredible lot of anxiety because it seems like there's not a lot of planning going into these cuts. It's like, let's jump in and just start swinging the machete and cutting stuff. So that keeps you up at night.
The acting head of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Brian Mercier, also attended, telling people there are opportunities under the Trump administration for Native entrepreneurs, especially in energy and economic development. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios in Eugene, Oregon.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, providing millions of dollars of scholarships to Native students every year. Applications are accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND.
Enbridge strives to be a good steward of the environment, a safe operator of essential energy infrastructure, and a good neighbor. More on Enbridge's Indigenous Reconciliation Action Plan at Enbridge.com. Enbridge proudly supports this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
It was incredible seeing everybody out and the energy and just knowing that I made so many people proud that believed in me, you know.
Interior Alaska dog musher Jesse Holmes wins his first Iditarod Trail sled dog race. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, March 14th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Tanana Chiefs Conference rejoins the Alaska Federation of Natives amid concerns over federal cuts.
There's no way to sugarcoat it. Cuts are coming. And so we just have to be as prepared as we can be.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Canadian lumber company Transpac Group confirmed on Thursday that it's largely shutting down its site on Afognak Island near Kodiak, effective immediately. Representatives of the company say that's because earlier this month, China halted imports of U.S. logs in response to tariffs President Donald Trump imposed on Chinese goods. Charles Kim is Transpac's CEO. He says the company is sending most of its staff home because it cannot find new customers, despite trying to divert its products to other countries, including India.
We've been trying very hard since the announcement. So about a week or so, we've been trying very hard to see if we could sell it to somewhere else. And it has all failed.
The company has a contract for the logging site at Danger Bay on Afognak Island, just north of Kodiak. The site is owned by the Afognak Native Corporation, which could not be reached for comment. Kim says that contract also means it has certain obligations, including road building and maintenance. Transpac also harvests and exports timber from Canada, Oregon, and Washington. Of the roughly 60 staff normally stationed at the site, about 11 will stay there for now. Kim says the company can afford to do that for about 1 year, but if the lumber ban lasts longer, the site will close permanently, a major financial risk.
Eventually we'll have to fold. And I think that will be the last of us, the contractors and loggers in the state of Alaska, I think, where we would be done. It's been pretty tough already as is.
Kim says he cannot speak for other logging contractors in the state, but he suspects they're facing the same dilemma. The news comes less than 2 months after Trump signed an executive order directing federal agencies to, quote, unleash Alaska's extraordinary resource potential, including timber. An Anchorage Superior Court judge has dismissed a lawsuit challenging the proposed Trans-Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline as incompatible with the state constitution. The Alaska Beacon reports that the suit filed last year alleges that the founding laws of the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation are incompatible with the Alaska Constitution's guarantee of equal access to natural resources. That, the lawsuit says, is because the liquefied natural gas pipeline would result in so much climate change that it would destroy access to fish and wildlife. In her ruling Tuesday, Judge Danny Crosby sided with the state of Alaska, whose attorneys argued that the lawsuit is substantially similar to previous cases decided by the Alaska Supreme Court. In a written statement, the law firm Our Children's Trust, which has been representing the plaintiffs, said it would appeal Crosby's decision to the Alaska Supreme Court. When the lawsuit was filed, the eight plaintiffs ranged in age from 11 to 22. The project is envisioned as a pipeline running from the North Slope to Cook Inlet with industrial-scale facilities at either end to handle the natural gas. Construction work on the pipeline has yet to commence due to a lack of funding. The Alaska Department of Law said in arguments that state law and precedent set by the Alaska Constitution mean that the court lacks jurisdiction to decide the issue. Jesse Holmes won his first Iditarod Trail sled dog race this morning on the race's longest trail in history, Alaska Public Media's Ava White reports.
Holmes and his 10-dog team, led by Polar and Hercules, pulled onto Front Street in Nome just before 3 a.m. Friday. The early morning arrival and temperatures hovering around 0 degrees didn't stop hundreds of people from cheering him on and celebrating his win. This year's trail was the longest ever, clocking 1,128 miles, and Holmes' team finished it in 10 days, 14 hours, and 56 minutes. It was the longest time it's taken a champion to reach Nome in over 2 decades. Holmes says he's been waiting for this moment for years.
I have nothing to stop smiling about. You know, I have everything going for me, and I should never feel a down moment in my life. If I died tomorrow, I'd just die the happiest man.
Holmes walked down his line of dogs, petting them and throwing them raw steaks as a celebratory treat. He jumped into the crowd to hug his fans who had lined up for over an hour waiting for his arrival. Holmes is originally from Alabama and now lives in interior Alaska, where he says he works as a carpenter. He starred on the reality TV show Life Below Zero. He notched his first Iditarod victory on his 8th try and says he's full of emotion.
But it was incredible seeing everybody out and the energy and just knowing that I made so many people proud that believed in me, you know. I think that's the most rewarding feeling of it all.
Holmes wins an Iditarod notable for its long trail after scarce snow in South Central Alaska forced race organizers to reroute it to Fairbanks. Plus, its small race field, the number of starting mushers, just 33, tied with a record low. And it had a close game of leapfrog. For much of the race, Holmes, Matt Hall, and Paige Drobny traded first place. They were all chasing their first Iditarod win. They all live in the interior and all have come close to winning before. Holmes said he and Hall have been friends for decades. The two met in Eagle, a village on the Yukon River, where they worked at Hall's father's trap line. At one point when they saw each other on the trail this year, Holmes says he yelled out.
I yelled across the ice. I was on a parallel trail. I go, man, 16 years ago in Eagle, can you believe this? Like, here we are, we're leading the Iditarod. And like, it was a real cool moment between us.
This was a banner year for interior mushers, and it involved a whole lot of love at the finish line. Holmes came back out to the Burled Arch as Hall and his 10 dogs dashed in to secure second place for the second year in a row. Dozens of people cheered on Hall, including his wife Elke, who he immediately kissed.
Gorgeous. Hey, gorgeous.
Hey.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Sled dogs Dai and Kivik led the team in. Hall was raised on the Yukon River, which much of the Iditarod Trail followed. Still, he says the trail this year went on for far too long and included a loop on the river that felt endless. Hall told the Iditarod Insider in an interview played over loudspeakers at the finish that he remembers his thinking.
Oh no, more Yukon, and more, and more, and then this part, we gotta go back on it again.
Holmes and Hall were both back at the finish line later Friday morning to congratulate Drobny for her third place arrival. Drobny's team, known as the Squids, is also known for their themes. Last year was disco, this year's is tropical. As Drobny and her dogs raced in, her friends and family chanted in shiny hula skirts wearing flower leis around their necks while doing a kick line.
Okay. Yeah, one, two!
Drobny didn't sign up for the Iditarod until a couple months before it started, but she said her dogs deserve to be here. In Nome, I'm Ava White.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, locals are skeptical over yet another push to open the Tongass National Forest to timber harvest.
We don't have people sitting on their hands that can't wait to get into the forest and mow down all the trees.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable Public Radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation.
Breakup on the lower Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers this year might be milder than normal, according to an initial river breakup report released by the Alaska Pacific River Forecast Center. In its initial predictions, the center pointed to this winter's low snowpack and warmer than average temperatures as the reason for a below average breakup flooding potential along the lower Yukon and Kuskokwim. This winter has been the sixth warmest on record for the Bethel area in the past century and has resulted in a much lower snowpack overall. Typically, river breakups with more severe flooding correlate with cooler temperatures in April, followed by a dramatic increase in warming in May, a sudden flick of the switch. But forecasted temperatures across western Alaska for those early spring months are overall warmer this year, and because temperatures won't be shifting from extreme cold, there's a lower likelihood of a dramatic change. The report is just an initial prediction, though, and the River Forecast Center has not estimated a breakup date yet. Temperatures in April and May will ultimately determine the severity of river breakup, and the next breakup report is expected March 25th. Alaska's state ombudsman is resigning in April. Kate Burkhart leaves after 8 years on the job and countless investigations that have led to major systemic reforms in the state. The ombudsman is a nonpartisan position within the state that serves as part of the checks and balances for the government. The office investigates systemic and individual complaints of state agencies and makes recommendations on how to fix them. In an interview Thursday, Burkhart said she's proud of the work she and her staff have accomplished during her tenure.
Government touches people's lives every day, whether they realize it or not. And for a lot of people, it touches their lives in some of the most intimate ways possible. The Ombudsman's Office, we are able to connect people to the folks in government who can solve their problem. And then if for whatever reason that doesn't happen, then we can investigate to figure out what happened, why it happened, and what can be done to fix it.
Burkhart will leave Juneau for Maine to be closer to family. She took a job as the director of Maine's Bureau of Labor Standards for the Labor Department. The state of Alaska created its ombudsman's office 5 decades ago, and Alaska is one of only 5 states that have a statewide ombudsman. Throughout Burkhart's tenure, her office has investigated thousands of complaints from all across the state. Notably, the office released a report in 2019 that substantiated major problems about the treatment of patients at the Alaska Psychiatric Institute in Anchorage. And in 2022, it recommended systemic changes to the state's Department of Corrections following a complaint that correctional officers used excessive force on inmates in Anchorage. The state of Alaska is currently grappling with a significant budget deficit, and the Ombudsman's Office is not immune to potential cuts or downsizing. Burkhart says a robust state Ombudsman's Office is necessary to maintain accountability and justice for the residents of Alaska.
The programs that the state of Alaska provides can be essential to people's livelihoods. And when things go sideways, there's not always an easy fix. And sometimes you can't even figure out who to talk to fix it. And that's where the ombudsman provides an invaluable resource to constituents.
Assistant Ombudsman Jacob Carbaugh will serve as acting ombudsman until the Alaska legislature appoints a permanent replacement. Interior Alaska's major tribal consortium will be rejoining the Alaska Federation of Natives 2 years after it withdrew. KUAC's Patrick Gilchrist reports.
During their annual meeting in Fairbanks, the Tanana Chiefs Conference full board of directors voted Thursday in favor of a resolution to restore membership with AFN. Tanana Chiefs Conference is a nonprofit tribal organization that aims to advance the health and social service needs of its 42 members, 37 of which are federally recognized tribes. In April 2023, TCC voted to bow out of AFN, which is the largest statewide Native organization in Alaska. Dinakanaga brought forward Thursday's measure. First Chief of Huslia, Jack Holchies, is on the Dinakanaga Board of Directors. He says unity will be key as looming federal cuts threaten to impact the budgets of tribes and tribal organizations in the region.
We feel that it is important that we all collaborate and work together with other Native people to have a stronger voice during this critical time we are facing with the federal government and other entities.
The move comes as Congress is considering major reductions in federal spending, including cuts that budget experts say will shrink Medicaid coverage. On Wednesday, TCC Chief and Chairman Brian Ridley said Medicaid contributes about $68 million in annual revenue that the organization uses to provide health services to its members. And while he acknowledged that TCC isn't likely to lose all those funds, Ridley says his organization may have to pull from budget reserves to continue service if Medicaid funding is significantly reduced.
There's no way to sugarcoat it. Cuts are coming. And so we just have to be as prepared as we can be.
It's that kind of financial uncertainty that's making a united front more appealing, says Nalato elder Peter Demoski.
I'm having second thoughts about my opposition to AFN all these years. We are going to be in a financial crisis in the next few years. And I believe we need the support of AFN to help us get through those difficult times.
The decision to rejoin AFN goes beyond strength in numbers. The resolution directs TCC staff to regain membership ahead of Alaska Federation of Natives Fall Convention this October, with the goal of advancing tribal sovereignty and protecting subsistence rights. Those goals touch on one of the reasons Tanana Chiefs Conference broke from AFN 2 years ago. A TCC statement from 2023 said the statewide organization hadn't taken adequate action in response to calls to support salmon populations and traditional ways of life. But Ridley says,
since then, they've made a huge effort to try to push subsistence on social media and other things. So again, I want to give credit where credit is due. They have tried to make a lot of the improvements that we asked for.
In Fairbanks, I'm Patrick Gilchrist.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know 100 years ago, the chances of a baby dying in Alaska before their first birthday was almost 10%? Because of advances in public health like sanitation, access to clean water, vaccines for children, and access to healthcare in rural communities, the chances of dying are now less than 1%. To learn more about what the Alaska Department of Health is doing to improve Alaskans' health for the next 100 years, visit health.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation.
Alaska's State Development Agency says it's talking with the operator of the Ketchikan shipyard to resolve a dispute that threatens the future of the key local employer. That comes about 2 weeks after the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, or ADA, told shipyard operator Vigor that it would not renew its contract to run the multi-million-dollar state facility. ADA said Vigor had not supported enough jobs, made enough money for the state, or adequately contributed to repairs and maintenance. The agency said the operator's time at the yard would end November 30th. Now, though, tensions appear to be easing. A joint statement from ADA and Vigor says the two are, quote, united in their commitment to preserving this essential shipyard. Both say they're working together on ways to extend their working relationship by exploring new opportunities to better serve the state's maritime needs. Neither side offered any details on what had changed in the meantime. Previously, ADA said it was willing to discuss extending the end of the contract to March of next year, but there's no mention of the March deadline in yesterday's statement, indicating the pair may be negotiating a longer-term deal. ADA and Vigor say they're optimistic about the shipyard's future and its enduring role in the region. They say they'll provide further updates in the near future as negotiations continue. President Trump issued two executive orders on March 1st to expand logging in national forests. They come after he suspended the roadless rule, which lifted the ban on new road construction in national forests. Together, the orders could increase timber harvests in Taungus National Forest, but as KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, some locals are not so sure.
One of the orders aims to get forestry projects approved more quickly, even if it means undermining environmental laws. The other order looks at whether importing lumber is a national security risk. The Taungus is the country's largest national forest at 17 million acres, and it's one of the last protected temperate rainforests in the world. Locals say it has environmental value, but the main reason the orders probably won't lead to more logging is that much of the industry moved out long ago. Joel Jackson is president of the Organized Village of Cake, a Tlingit tribe on Kuprinoff Island, and has seen logging come and go. In economic terms, Jackson says the real value of the forest is in tourism.
People want to come from down south and look at a scarred landscape. They come up here because they like to look at the Taungus, the wildness of it.
They come to see the environment that his village depends on.
Berries and medicinal plants and just everything it provides out there. And the animals, the deer, moose, bears, the shade from those old growth trees along our streams that the salmon return to every year after year.
He says that now, since most lumber yards and pulp mills have closed shop, it's costly for loggers to come harvest the trees and ship them out. Jackson says Trump's orders won't change the financial constraints of logging in the rugged and remote southeast region. Gordon Chu runs Tenneke Logging Company, a small father-son timber operation on Chichagof Island. He echoes Jackson's sentiment and says the industry would have to be completely redeveloped for the Taungus to deliver more timber.
We don't have people sitting on their hands that can't wait to get into the forest and mow down all the trees.
Chu says he's an environmentalist. His company sustainably harvests about 100 trees each year. They're second growth, young trees that have grown back in areas that were heavily logged in the past.
We live here in the heart of the Taungus National Forest and don't want to be a part of any deforestation or destruction. So we've always only purchased selective timber sales.
The Forest Service marks out one out of no more than three trees. Then Chu and his son carefully fell them by hand. He's not convinced that Trump's executive orders will accelerate logging in the Taungus, especially since the Forest Service is likely overwhelmed due to recent firings.
They're dealing with distraught human beings that have been like cast aside. So I know the hope was efficiency, but you don't get more efficient with fewer people doing more work.
If the administration is serious about increasing timber production, Chu says they should go through Congress to streamline the approval process for small, sustainable operations like his.
You can still have industry and do it responsibly.
Viking Lumber, a well-known logging company in the region, did not respond to a request for comment. Robert Venables is the executive director at Southeast Conference. He says there is room in the Taungus for additional logging, especially in second growth areas. But it's unlikely that the industry would scale up to the behemoth it once was.
I believe it's more likely to colonize the moon.
Legal battles over logging in the Taungus roiled during Trump's first term, and more could be on the way. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
Juneau's state office building is home to the state's only publicly available theater organ, and its fate is in question. The Kimball Theater organ's been around for nearly 100 years and has been part of the State Museum's collection since the 1970s. But now, the organ is approaching the end of its usable life. Rebuilding it would cost upwards of $250,000 and require shipping to Portland, Oregon for a year. Father and son Jonas and Chris Nordwall came to Juneau from Portland to take a look at the inner workings of the organ. They talked to KTOO's Jamie Deep about what's needed to keep it going.
Go with your hands.
Yeah.
I have a feeling those are all feather touch right there. That one I already took down. Go to the next note, down. No. Like, slowly. How quickly is it contacting?
Feather touch?
All right, so let me just...
My name's Chris Nordwall, and I am co-owner of Rose City Organ Builders in Portland, Oregon. We came up to Juneau to tune the organ at the state office building, repair what we could in short order, and get it ready for what was the Friday afternoon lunch concert, and also then have the sit-down discussion in the Q&A forum that was just held to find out what the fate of the instrument will be.
I'm Jonas Nordwall. I'm from Portland, Oregon. And currently, I'm technically retired, but I'm at First United Methodist Church as the artistic music director, and I've been there 54 years. I was approached by my son, who is a co-owner of Rose City Organ Builders, about coming up here to have a meeting with people at the museum about their Kimball pipe organ and its possible future. It was an opportunity to come up and see what's going on and what the thoughts of the community are, because that's the important thing. It's not what the outsiders want to recommend, it's what's going to be the best results for your local community.
This is a challenge because you're coming in and trying to diagnose something that isn't original per se. Parts of it are. Parts of it have been updated. I mean, that's always the feel-good thing at the end of the day, if you've actually nailed something down that, you know, has been an ongoing thing. You'll do what you have to do to get that note to function the way it should. It may not be the prettiest repair, but if it works for the performance, that's what you're going for. And I think that's what this thing has seen over the last 30 years. It's had the immediate needed maintenance to get it through the next day. And it's kind of hit the brick wall. So the other thing you have to be really careful about is you can't start going too deep with this, because it's like a Pandora's box. You might be able to repair that and you might cause 10 other problems in the process.
Every project that we've undertaken always has its own challenges. And there's a lot of gnashing of teeth. There's blood, sweat, and tears, but the final product, when you hear it make music for the first time, is always thrilling. And when you see people enjoying it again, as they remember hearing it and whatnot, it gives you a lot of momentum to keep going in an otherwise very small niche market. I hope it's still around. I hope that it's something that we'll see a resurgence. Everything has to die off. Hopefully it won't completely die off, but I hope to see that it'll sort of have its rebirth in the not too distant future.
That was Jonas and Chris Nordwall in a piece by Jamie Deep in Juneau. Chris is a co-owner of Rose City Organ Builders in Portland, Oregon, and Jonas Nordwall performed on Juneau's theater organ in the state office building last Friday. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Avery Elfelt in Haines, Ava White in Nome, Samantha Watson in Bethel, Clarice Larson, Eric Stone, Jamie Deep, and Alex Solomon in Juneau, and Patrick Gilchrist in Fairbanks. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. We had production help from Wesley Early, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
I'm not looking for forgiveness. Yeah, I'm alive, but I don't need a boy is mine, the boy is mine,
the boy is mine,
the boy is mine,
the boy is mine.
Keep on acting like a fool. You need to know.
turning as she walks through the door. Band skips a beat as she passes the dance floor. All the gentlemen offer their chairs. She walks them by as they continue to stare. Guy beside me said she looks like a dream. I look at him and say, man, you should have seen her this morning. Standing there in my t-shirt, all bare pink fuzzy slippers, still half asleep, brushing her teeth and smiling at me. I guess you just had to be there. Her laughing with colors in her hair. So if you're thinking, wow, she looks beautiful now, you should have seen her this morning. Hey, I'll admit that I'm a lucky guy to have a lady that can make you look twice. Yes, she's breathtaking when you see her all made up, but that don't compare to every morning I wake up. I don't expect you to know what I mean. All I can tell you is, man, you should have seen her this morning. Standing there in my t-shirt, out there pink fuzzy slippers, still half asleep, brushing her teeth and smiling at me. I guess you just had to be there. See her laughing with colors in her hair. So if you're thinking, wow, she looks beautiful now, you should have seen her this morning. Should have seen her this morning. Enough for the whole world to see. I know there's still a possibility.
Are you taking what is given to you in the form of true experience? Cause if you're not, your whole life could be spent doing time for a crime you say you didn't even do. The only fool that you're fooling is the fool that is you. Didn't even turn around and check to see if your victim's burning. I guess it's true what they say that without living there's no learning. From the J, the O, and the E. Mary, 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 it's quite contrary. Yo, how did you earn your dough? You didn't finish school, you ain't got no job. But to the human eye, it's pretty simple. You're always talking about what you want is respect, but never thinking about the little boy you neglect. Spending his formative years in a living hell, not realizing one day he'd end up in jail. Now on the other hand, it's damn, my man who planned a scam. Man, I'll be damned, it was the ultimate flim flam. He was saying that it was easy as pie, but little did Dan know he was about to die.
Challenge what the future holds. Try and keep your head up to the sky. Lovers, they may cause you tears. Go ahead, release your fears. Stand up and be counted. Don't be ashamed to cry. You gotta be bad. You gotta be bold. You gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard. You gotta be tough. You gotta be stronger. You gotta be cool, you gotta be calm, you gotta stay together. All I know, love will save the day. Herald what your mother said, read the books your father read. Trying to solve the puzzles in your own sweet time. Some may have more cash than you, others take a different view. As your day unfolds, challenge what the future holds. Trying to keep your head up to the sky. Lovers, they may cause you tears. Go ahead, release your fears. My, oh my, eh, eh, eh. You gotta be bad, you gotta be bold, you gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard, you gotta be tough, you gotta be stronger. Be cool, you gotta be calm, you gotta stay together. All I